access to the airwaves. For this hour, we have turned the airwaves over to a member of the public. The views expressed on the Access Hour do not necessarily represent the views of the station, its staff, its programmers, or the board of directors. But let's now begin our next foray into the freest form program on the WORT schedule. The Access Hour.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning into Access Hour tonight. My name is Jennifer, and I'm here with my colleagues Sue and Joanne to talk about dog rescue. We thought we'd start with a little bit of introduction on who we are and how we got involved in the world of dog rescue. So I'll kick off. As I mentioned, my name's Jennifer, and my life in rescue started almost 20 years ago when I lived out in Kansas City, and I desperately wanted a dog, but I was traveling and working a lot and didn't think it would be fair to have a dog of my own. So I started volunteering for a local shelter called Wayside Waves, which is one of the largest no-kill dog shelters in the Midwest. And I started out just walking dogs in my free time. Whenever I had a spare hour on the weekend, I would just go walk some dogs, help bathe them, get them ready for adoptions. And after about 4 years there, I ended up having to move. Although during my time there, I lasted 1 year before I adopted my first dog. So my first ever, what we call foster failure. But once I moved, I went to New York City and upstate New York, and there wasn't a shelter nearby for me to volunteer with. So I joined a breed rescue and started off as a fundraiser and then a transport coordinator, helping move dogs all around the country to get them into foster homes and forever homes. And after a while doing that, about 5 years ago, I became the international rescue coordinator for that rescue organization. And just recently founded a new organization called New Beginnings Greek Sporting Dog Rescue, which helps bring abandoned and abused hunting dogs from Greece over to the US to find loving homes. And just last weekend, one of our rescue dogs, an adorable little Springer Spaniel named Pavlos, came right through this area and ended up getting adopted in a wonderful home in La Crosse, Wisconsin. So I am the proud mom to eight rescued English setters. I have one paralyzed foster and another little foster on the way with a dislocated shoulder. So I embody the dog crazy lady, and I'm very happy to be here with you tonight. So that's me. Let me pass it over to my friends, Sue and Joanne. Sue, you want to go next?
Yes, I'm Sue, and I got involved in breed rescue through Above and Beyond English Setter Rescue about 8 to 10 years ago. That's actually how I initially met Jennifer, as a transport coordinator, because I did transports, and it was a great way for me to get to be with all the different English setters, but not bring another one home, which my family was very happy about. And my kind of way into international rescue was my human children are adopted from South Korea. And on one of our trips over, I had a friend pass along to me that one of the rescues that was in Korea that rescues dogs from the dog meat trade, they were looking for flight volunteers. And I'll never forget, I sent my husband the link and I didn't say anything else. And he wrote back, he texted back and said, "You already called them, didn't you?" And of course I had. And so after we spent a lovely 3 weeks in South Korea and then a little trip over to Japan, we were lucky enough to bring home two Jindo dogs named Homie and Hoya that got adopted here in the United States. So that's kind of my, and I guess I'll tell you about my little rescue. I've got two rescues. I've got a little rescue named Jasper from, he was a Chicago stray. And then Josie is my little setter mix, English setter mix that I adopted from Turkey. And she is our absolute love. She is a distemper survivor, so she's got a little twitchy arm, and we love her for it. We just love all of her kind of little silliness. So that's my story. Joanne.
Hello, I'm Joanne. And I am the dog mom to Iris and Belle. Iris is an 8-year-old Aussie, and Belle is a 5-year-old English setter. I am a foster failure, an adopter, and also I have a few other dogs in the rescue. So my rescue involvement started about 20 years ago. I went to a pet store to buy dog food for my 2 dogs then, and the local rescue was holding an adoption event. And I think there's a song that goes something like, just one look, that's all it took. And that pretty much sums it up with myself in freckles. I saw her sitting on a lawn chair at this adoption event. And before I knew it, I was walking out the door with this dog and just a phone number to call if I had any foster questioning. So I did not know what breed she was, but she turned out to be an English setter, and she started my love affair with the breed.
Thanks, Joanne. So all of us are connected through breed rescue, specifically English setter breed rescue, although we've all actually helped a lot of different dog breeds get rescued over the years. But Sue, maybe you can talk a little bit about breed rescue and why it exists, why it's important.
So breed rescue, like for instance, we're all kind of attached to the English setter breed. And one of the great things about a breed rescue is that the rescuers actually they know the breed, they know the temperaments, the characteristics of the breed, and they can help match that breed with a family, rather than, you know, sometimes if a certain kind of dog is in a shelter and just anybody comes in and adopts it, it might end up being okay. But English setters are pretty high energy breeds, and not everybody realizes that when they adopt them. So if they come to a breed rescue, then people kind of know what they're getting when they go to do an adoption. And it benefits the dogs, it benefits the people that are adopting, that want to specifically adopt an English setter. And one of the things that, you know, we kind of wanted to transition into talking about is also how we transport dogs all over the United States, and transporters actually play a really critical role in what we do, which it looks like we'll be able to talk about right when we come back. We'll talk about transports right when we come back from our break.
All right, and this is the first day of the WORT Winter Pledge Drive. We'll be doing this for about 2 weeks, unless we get a bunch of phone calls and we can wrap it up early and get you back to amazing programming like the Access Hour tonight. My name is Adrienne Ranney. I'm the producer for the Access Hour, the engineer for tonight's show, and I'm also the volunteer and outreach coordinator for WORT. And tonight I am joined by Susan Sheldon, who is our donor relations director here at WORT, meaning she puts this entire production together. She tries to come up with the best ways for you to call in and help us out today. So, Susan, what should they call in for?
You know, they should call in because they love the Access Hour. I have to say, every Monday night at 7, I can't even wait to. It's not one of my archive shows. I tune in at 7 on Mondays because this show could be anything. This is the show that people get to sign up for. You can go on our website and sign up to host an hour of radio. We do the engineering for you. You don't have to learn how to run a soundboard in order to do the Access Hour. But so you just get to sit in front of the microphones and talk. We can record in advance if that's easier for you. We can do all kinds of things. But the Access Hour has been the most amazing music sometimes, that people come in and they want to share niche music that they really love.
Yeah, very obscure sometimes.
Sometimes the Access Hour is, I remember one that was about Armageddon and the end of the world.
Yep, yep. We've also had ones about aliens, which have been pretty popular in my book.
Sightings and stuff, yes.
Yes.
and we've had people from the humanities department come over and debate a different question, social question, approaching it from all different viewpoints. People have come in and recited poetry.
Stand-up comedy as well. And I just realized, Susan, we should probably give out the number to call, which is 608-256-2001, to call in and pledge to the Access Hour. This is basically public access for the radio. It's people's foray into the audio medium. And Susan's right. We try to make it as easy as possible. Anybody can sign up for it. And what's one of the things they could get? Is it? Oh, you got something else to say, Susan. What's that?
Right. One of the things that I am surprised at, you know, we're in our first day of the drive. People were able to. Oh, the other thing is go to our website. If you don't want to talk to somebody, you want to get on quick and get out, go to our website. That's WORTFM.org. Or as Sybil likes to say, WORTFM.org. hit the orange donate button. But the thing that's been really popular over the weekend and during the first part of the day is the new hoodie, which has been designed by P.S. Mueller, who we all know works for the Isthmus, the Onion, the New Yorker.
Yep.
And he's also done wonderful artwork for Wart in the past. But the name of the hoodie slogan, the cartoon slogan, is Another Weirdo for Wart.
Great slogan.
And I'm very proud to be. I've been a weirdo for Wart since 1984.
Oh, yeah. I've been a weirdo. I mean, if you live in Madison and you've listened to WORT, that kind of makes you a weirdo. And we're actually going to get back to the Access Hour here in just a minute. But again, that number to call is 608-256-2001. We have Sarah on the phones waiting for your call. And you can go online and use a credit card or a debit card.
Or PayPal.
And that is WORTFM.org. But now let's get back to the Access Hour.
Thank you guys for letting these dog weirdos join Access Hour tonight. We're so excited to be here. And we wanted to talk next a little bit about rescue relay transports because it's such an important part of dog rescue. Because dogs who need rescue can be anywhere in the country. And to find them the right home, those homes might not be next door. Now, maybe they are, but a lot of times that perfect home for that right dog is hundreds or maybe even thousands of miles away. And I've literally, over the last 10 years, moved dogs hundreds of thousands of miles across the country and even across the world. And the way rescue transports work, we think of it as an underground railroad, although not secret or underground, it's actually above ground. But the way a relay transport works is we draft out a transport from wherever a dog is to where they need to go, and we split that into segments of usually 60 to 90 miles and recruit a bunch of volunteers all over the country that hand that dog over from one place to another until they get from, in the case of my little Springer last weekend, from Michigan to Wisconsin. Or they could go from New York to California. We try not to transport them that far, but that happens too. And the beauty of rescue transports is it creates such an amazing community of people. And I can tell you, having worked in rescue, some of my very best friends in the world, including Sue and Joanne, who are on the phone with us or on the radio with us, we all connected through rescue. And you build this really special bond. It's amazing how you actually create these connections with people that otherwise you never might have met, never would have known, but you bond over these amazing dogs. And when you see them get into a great home, it's just so heartwarming. So I know we all have some very heartwarming stories about some of the dogs we've transported. So maybe, Joanne, do you want to share one of your stories?
Sure. And before I share my story, I want to say that that's how Sue and I met on a relay transport. She actually transported my Gloucester Louie to me.
We did, yeah. In the Medieval Times parking lot.
Yes. And that was almost to the day, about 4 years ago. Right, Sue?
Yes. Yeah.
So I'll share a transport story, but it's really not a relay transport story because I drove the transport. about 3 years ago, Jennifer made me, I'm sorry, Jennifer asked me to, she asked me to foster 2 6-month-old puppies. And Jennifer will tell you, I don't like to foster puppies, but yet she made me foster these 2, Luke and Fury. Well, once they were adopted, I don't want to say I was happy to see them go, but I did not want to wait for a transport, so I offered to drive them to their forever homes. Luke went to Atlanta, Georgia, and Kiri went to Florida. And yes, I drove them to Georgia and Florida. I was done with the puppy antics every minute of the day.
You know you love them, Joanne.
Yes, I have to say that, right? Yes. I still keep in touch with them, and Kiri is still just as crazy. And I used to call them the accomplices. So on the way driving there, I was thinking after these 2, I was going to take just a few weeks off from fostering. Well, on the way back, as I was driving through Kentucky, the rescue called, knowing I was in Kentucky, and said, where are you? So I'm like, I'm in Kentucky. Oh, would you mind driving just 2 or 3 hours out of your way to pick up a failed hunting dog named Wendy? So yes, I drove 3 hours out of my way, picked up Wendy. We fostered her, and she is living the best life in Alabama. So that's my transport story.
I love it. I have a cute little transport story. It was 2 setters that had been given up by their mom, and she drove them. She was driving them from Montana, or she was in Montana, and she drove them probably 1,000 miles, got them to their overnight host. Their overnight host had them, because often when they're a really long one, we might ask somebody to overnight a dog. And the overnight host could not get them out of her mind. And the dogs made it to their foster home. And the next thing we knew, within that week, that overnight host was like, I can't live without them. And so the amazing thing was, is that she wanted both of them, which was fantastic that these 2 got to stay together. And so the next weekend, we actually flip-flopped the entire transport. Everybody was available, and we all drove the other direction and drove these 2 beautiful babies back to their new mom, which was, yeah, just kind of a neat experience and a neat story.
Thanks, Sue. There are so many great stories about transports and their connection. But I think one of the most important things about rescue is fosters, right? We talked about taking them from their fosters to their adopters, or transporting them from whatever their situation was into a safe foster home. And out of everything, rescue just wouldn't work without foster homes. So you're talking to 3 ladies who foster all the time. We always have fosters in our home, and thought it would be interesting to share a few stories about why it is that we foster and some of the experiences that we've had. So since Joanne is our great grandmother of fostering, she's got the track record of I think the most fosters of anyone I know. Joanne, do you want to maybe share a little bit about why you foster and what some stories are that you've experienced?
Sure. And just so everyone knows, I've been doing this for about 20 years, and I've had over 200 fosters. Last year, I fostered 10. Why do I foster? Because there's a need. So many are being euthanized on a daily basis due to overcrowding in the shelters. I'll take the dogs that no one has chosen, or the ones that Jennifer picked for me. If the dog that I foster turns out to be a great dog, I say I picked it. If it turns out to be not so great of a dog, Jennifer picked that dog for me then.
You know I only send you the best dogs, Joanne.
You keep saying that. Right now I'm fostering a dog named Paco from Greece. He's deaf. Oh, what a surprise. Guess who picked that dog?
Oh, my gosh.
I'll share one other quick thing before I turn it over to Sue. But last July, I fostered an adorable little girl named Kali from Greece. A few months later, her son was available to come over. His name is Fritz. So I fostered Fritz too. So I am Fritz's grandmother. And there was a mother and son reunion over the summer at my house. Kali came to spend the night while I was still fostering Fritz, and it was great to see those two reunited. So, Sue, do you have a story?
Yes.
Or one of your stories?
Yes. So I've gotten involved with fostering. I transported for a few years, and I ended up seeing actually a post on Facebook from Jennifer about a temp foster, and it was for a dog that was flying in from Greece to O'Hare. And I live right outside of Chicago. So I was like, oh, we could do that. We could do anything for a week. And at the time, oh gosh, I'm not going to be able to think off the top of my head how old my kids were. But anyway, his name was Apollo, and he was absolutely adorable. My family fell in love with him. Cried when he left, and it was just as wonderful as I thought it would be. And so kind of after that, Jennifer kind of has this saying about rescuing dogs is like the mafia, and once you're in, you can't get out.
So true, and I
definitely have found that to be true. So that next spring, or well, I guess winter, it was January of 2020, right before COVID, we took our first full foster, and his name was Jimmy, and he was fantastic. We absolutely adored him. And pretty much ever since then, we've almost always had a foster. And I have a tendency to myself, but my family as well, we have a tendency to like the wonky ones. So if there's a dog with one eye, if there's a dog that has, you know, a congenital defect in their legs, or like my Josie, who is a distemper survivor, that those are the ones that I want. So, I had this lovely dog named Cleese. And if you know John Cleese, you might be able to guess why his name was Cleese. He walked kind of silly. So he was named after, you know, the Ministry of the Silly Walks. And then Adam was my one-eyed boy. He'd actually been shot in the face, and he was the most amazing, sweetest dog, that we've ever had. He would have been definitely an easy one that we could have foster failed. And I would say, I'm the same as Joanne, that, you know, the reason why I do it is I feel like it's important for my family and our kids, to kind of see this process, and, just knowing there's a need out there, just knowing that, we can be that bridge to help save a life and help find a dog, a new family.
Yeah, and fostering is so important. And we all have special dogs that we love. For me, I love fostering all the dogs, but I have a special place in my heart for the really fearful ones, the ones that often have been mistreated, because it's such an amazing thing to see a dog that starts out so scared and so shy. I've had some fosters that you couldn't even touch the day they walked into my house. And that first day that they run to you with joy, or cuddle on the couch, put their head in your lap. It's like the most amazing feeling. And to watch them grow is just so incredible. And so whenever they're really fearful or timid or abused dogs, they always touch my heart and make me want to reach out and give them a home and give them the love that they deserve. But one other funny foster story I'll share, I fostered a dog once named Alicia, and the person that rescued her from the street said, you know, Jennifer, she might be pregnant. We're not sure, but we think there's a possibility that she might be pregnant because we saw her getting a little busy with some of the other dogs in the street. So just want you to know that before you take her in. And I said, well, that's okay. I'm sure I can find a way to deal with that. I've fostered a mom and pups before. And so I brought her home. I took her to my vet. My vet examined her, and she was this tiny little skinny girl. And she was so agile. She could jump a 6-foot fence from a dead sit. And my vet looked at her and she said, no, she's not pregnant. I understand they saw her getting a little jiggy with the boys in the street, but I don't think she's pregnant. And so I said, okay, great. I'd rather not have, you know, a litter of puppies. But about 2 weeks later, I noticed that Alicia suddenly started looking like a cow. And she was black and with white spots. And all of a sudden, she got large. And I took her back to my vet and I said, you know what? She's looking a little chubby. So they did an X-ray. And sure enough, she was in fact pregnant with 7 babies. And we took the X-ray and you could see all these little spines inside her belly. They look like little tadpoles. And about a month later, sure enough, we had 7 baby puppies. And it was the first time I'd ever seen puppies being born. It was quite an experience. So that was an amazing, amazing foster experience. And I love how we stay in contact and all the families talk together. So that was a great foster experience. But now we shared a little bit about fostering, why it's important, why we love it. But now is a great time to take a quick pledge break. So don't forget to call in and donate.
Yes, and that number to call is 608-256-2001, and you just hit extension 1. And you can go online and donate at wortfm.org. And Susan, do you have some? Oh, there we go.
Yay. Bill from Madison made a very generous donation. His favorite shows are The Current Transmission, The Access Hour, and Psychoacoustics. And his comment, he made a comment, he said, I feel called by this weirdo business. Thanks, Wart, for doing what you do. And tune in to Query this and every Wednesday. So Bill is actually one of our wonderful volunteers. He actually has several roles at the station. And
he does, yeah.
Before I was a regular financial donor, before I came to work here, I still donate quite, I know just how much the financial support means to Wart, so I have continued and become an even bigger donor now that I am a staff member here.
Mm-hmm.
And many of our volunteers are also big donors because they know what our station makes possible.
And what a small budget we work with to make all these things possible. Definitely.
So I know that you're the volunteer coordinator.
I am the volunteer coordinator. And one of the amazing things that WRT has to offer, at least when I was younger and I was looking for direction in life, I knew that I loved radio. And the only place that at the time I could get experience with radio was my college radio station. But not everybody has that. And WORT is one of the last places here, at least in the Madison area, and I would venture to say most of Wisconsin, that you can learn broadcasting skills for free. And we teach one-on-one, hands-on training, and it's how to use a soundboard, how to become a reporter, how to work with deadlines, how to interview, how to do all these things.
How to be an audio engineer.
Yeah, how to edit an Adobe Audition. And that is possible to keep doing that with your donations to WORT. If you can't come and volunteer with us, that's fine. Even if you can just give $5 a month, it makes a huge impact on our whole production here.
We have a great staff. It's small. The full-time members, there's 7 of us, and there's 300 or so volunteers. people that need, you know, we have the new soundboards being installed, and that's going to be a big learning process.
By the
way, while we're yapping away, feel free to call 608-325-6-2001,
extension one.
It's very similar to my home phone number, and I can't tell you, Adrian, how many times I've given my home phone number out only to go home and have confused messages left on my answering machine because I'm old school and I have a landline, and people are like, I don't think it's W-O-R-T.
Oh, Susan. Oh, my goodness. And if that's a little too difficult, then go online at WORTFM.org and make your donation there. And you know what? I think it's about time to get back to the Access Hour.
Thanks, Adrian. So we were talking about fostering, and one of the things we always hear from people is that they're afraid to foster because they're not sure how to bring a new dog into their home, or they're not sure how they'd ever let a foster go. So we'd love to share a little bit about how you think about letting a foster go, and then really importantly, whether you're fostering or adopting, how you can introduce that new dog into your family and into your home. So Joanne, do you want to talk a little bit about how you foster and how you let those gorgeous dogs go when it's time to say goodbye?
Yes. So when I take my foster dog out in public and I introduce him to people and say, this is my foster, I usually hear, I could never foster. I would fall in love with them. And it's true. I do fall in love with all of my fosters. And what I tell the people is I can let them go because I get to choose their adopters. I know the life that they will lead will be the best life they'll ever have. And I get emotional just talking about this, how you said you like the fearful ones and you see them come out of their shells. I also see that change from, I'm just basically the middleman, I look at it, and I see the lives they live. Wendy that I mentioned down in Alabama, she is going for boat rides every day. They just live wonderful lives. What helps to say goodbye or what helps the hurt heal is knowing that their adopters will keep in contact with me. And I love to get pictures, videos, texts, and it makes my heart swell with joy seeing these lives that these dogs have come from to the lives that they're living now. I have a phrase, one and done. Just foster one and you're done. Temp foster one if you can't foster. There's so many dogs out there that need homes. And like I said, I do it. I can't adopt because I know there's so many waiting for me and a place to stay.
Well, and I always tell everyone the best way to say goodbye to your new foster is to plan your next one. So that's always a great way. You can heal the heart because you send off one amazing dog to a great family and there's another one waiting for you right behind it. And Sue and Joanne will tell you, I have an endless list of dogs that always need fosters. So we just keep them coming. But when you foster a lot, or even if you just adopt a dog, you have to bring them home. And that introduction process can be scary for some people. So, Joanne, I know you've introduced tons of dogs into your family, and Sue has as well. Do you want to start off maybe, Joanne, and talk a little bit about what you do to introduce a dog into your home? And Sue, please chime in. I know you've got lots of experience too.
So I think the most important thing is to introduce the resident dogs, the owner's dogs, to the foster dog on neutral ground. You know, do not bring that foster dog straight into the house. You want neutral ground, and you want to make sure it's a clear area, meaning there's no bones or treats or something that could trigger resource guarding. For the humans, you want to stay relaxed. I know my dogs can pick up on my nervousness. Sue, you have anything you want to add to that? Let me just say, too, something that's very important is the dog's body language. You want to be able to read your dog and read the foster dog body language. And, you know, the ears back, the a tail wagging does not always mean that dog is happy.
Yeah, what I was going to add is, you know, I actually just recently had a foster dog come back to me that it just ended up not being a good fit. And he was a little more stressed this time around when he came back. And so even though he knew my dogs, I actually had a new dog, a new foster dog. And we kept him gated a little while longer, which we didn't really need to do in the, you know, in the beginning when we first got him back in last summer. But he just was a little more stressed, you know, he has a little more baggage now. And just keeping him gated from the other dogs was all he needed. And, you know, just for him personally, it was just like a day or two. And then that was it. And the other thing that we always like to recommend too is drag leashes. So, you know, those first couple of days when the dogs are out in the yard playing around, even though, you know, it can get messy with the drag leash because they will drag it through, you know, the unmentionables. but the nice thing about the drag is that if for any reason, like that dog tries to challenge a fence or try to get over a fence, you can always step on it. You can easily get a hold of the dog without, you know, being too much of an issue. So yeah, I would say those would be the two things I would add. Did we want to talk a little bit about the rule of threes, Joanne?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And when I adopt a foster out, I give a copy of the 333 rule for dogs to the new adopters. And that means 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 month rule. Keep in mind, every dog is different, but this is a good guideline for understanding a newly adopted dog. So 3 days, a dog could still, will most likely feel overwhelmed. It could be scared. It might not eat. You know, it's just not sure of the environment. So after 3 weeks, you can usually see the dog settling in. It's feeling more comfortable. Realizes this could be its forever home. It's learning a routine. This is also the time not to let your guard down, because this is when a dog may start testing boundaries or some behavioral issues may come up. And then we come to the 3 month period. This is where the dog is finally comfortable in its home. It's built a trust, a bond with its owner. It's gained a complete sense of security with its family. It's in its routine. So it's part of the family. So all my adopters get a copy of this 333 rule.
Thanks, Joanne. And we'll make sure to post a copy of that 333 rule out on the WORT calendar and page. So anybody who's interested will have access to that. But I think one of the most important things to remember, as Joanne said, is just like people, every dog has its own personality, its own character, and its own history. Some have been through a lot. Some, if you adopt a puppy, they have relatively little baggage. But each one adapts in their own way, just like we adapt in our own ways in new situations. And it's important whenever you bring a dog into your home, whether you're adopting from a breeder or a rescue, hopefully a rescue, because we're a bunch of rescue
dogs. Yes, yes.
But whenever you bring a dog home, a foster or an adopted dog, to really pay attention to what that dog needs and to watch, right? And give it time, give that dog time to feel comfortable and be patient, because they want so badly to be loved. I've rarely ever met a dog who didn't want love and didn't want affection, but they don't always know what's expected of them. And so it's a training process. And the more patient you can be and show that dog that you love them and that you're willing to care about them, and even if they're a little naughty at first, then that really makes a difference. So those early introductions are really, really important.
Yes, you're talking about dogs being naughty, and I just figured we'd, you know, maybe share a few stories about some of our naughty fosters. I had one that a couple Thanksgivings ago, we were making Thanksgiving dinner, and I looked up and he's standing on my kitchen counter. And we have a tendency to send pictures and videos back and forth to each other, you know, who's got the naughtiest foster, whose is doing this, whose is, you know, part billy goat, you know. a lot of us will do DNA tests on our fosters, and we always say, is there part billy goat in there? And those are the dogs, though, that those silly personalities just get you. And yeah, sometimes they give us a little bit more work to do, a little bit more cleanup, but I just love those dogs for it, because it obviously means they're getting comfortable in our home and, you know, are starting to push the boundaries a little bit.
I've had several billy goats in my house that I fostered that Jennifer picked for me.
And what do you say to them, Joanne? Joanne has a saying whenever her fosters are being naughty. What is it you say, Joanne?
Where's your mother?
Whenever Joanne's fosters are naughty, we get a text message going and little videos that say, where is your mother?
So I think new fosters should always keep in mind, they should go into it with their eyes wide open. You know, I have had several pillows chewed. I've had shoes, too numerous to count, destroyed. But like you said, to see them come from this fearful dog or this dog that you know wants to trust you into becoming this lap dog, you know, giving you kisses and wagging its whole body when it comes in. That, to me, that's another reason why I foster. But fostering is not difficult. I think the hardest part is saying goodbye, but you should know what you're getting into. Have your eyes wide open. And expect some chewed shoes or pillows or some billy goats that like to sit on the table.
Yeah, I think billy goats are a common theme. I find with a lot of my fosters, we have to teach them the rules of the house and what's expected. And in my house, dogs are welcome on the furniture. I love to cuddle on the couch and watch a good football game with my setter in my lap. Or to snuggle up in bed, especially on a cold winter up here in the north. So it's always nice to have warm setters. Three dog night really is a thing on those cold Wisconsin winters. Three dogs cuddled up beside you will definitely keep you warm, even when you hit the polar vortex. So that's a great thing. But, you know, I've got one of my dogs, Sarah. She's laying down twitching right beside me. But we were joking, my husband and I, today, because she is the natural predator of throw pillows, because she's generally a really good dog, but she absolutely will destroy any throw pillow she gets her hands on. So she's welcome on the furniture, but she had to learn that that throw pillows are not intended to be her breakfast. So there's always something, but we love them all the same.
Yeah.
So they're totally worth it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So now's probably a good time, before we go too crazy about our foster stories, to hand it back to Susan and Adrian for another quick pledge break.
And that number to call to pledge is 608-256-2001, extension 1, or you can go online and pledge at wortfm.org. And what I'd like to point out is that the Access Hour is also a great place for local musicians to perform. We actually have a space in the station, our vinyl library, where we set up bands to perform. And it's not just that we have available here, but I have learned about so much local music from WORT. And it's not just the festivals, but it's our DJs. And they really show up for local musicians.
They show up for local musicians. We have Musicians for Wort, where musicians show up for us, and we help publicize them at different events. And I want to say, as somebody that's really aware of who's donating and stuff, because, and I don't share that information, you I won't be talking about your donation and by name, but I just want to say in general, musicians are very, our local musicians are very supportive of Wart. And I think if you know a local musician and you ask them what radio station they listen to, they're going to say WORT.
Definitely.
Because they are not, just as you are not interested in the top 40. I mean, I once in a while, I turn the dial just to listen and I'm like, ah, that's what the majority of people are listening to. That's enough.
And I have my guilty pleasures here and there.
Do you?
I do.
Okay, I'm going to confess right now, and nobody, most people won't know, I love K-pop. There are a few K-pop bands I just love. Big Bang is amazing. There's a couple of other ones. But they're not played on the radio anyway.
No?
So I listen to them on YouTube. But I just want to say, while we're yapping away here, talking about very important things, please consider going to the phone and making a donation. A healthy and thriving art scene is a sign of a, you know, city that encourages people to come there. It invites talented people there. We have that thriving music scene, and part of the reason is really WORT.
Well, I'd like to point out that many people will post their events, their music events, to the WORT music calendar. And that calendar is read off every day by our WORT hosts. And I've learned about a lot of events coming up through that calendar. So if you put
on the calendar that it is a folk event, or it is a jazz event, or is it a classical event, or is it a rock event? Those are the hosts that read that section on the air. They don't read everything, every performer, but when the jazz show comes on, they're like, okay, here's who's appearing this week.
At every different
venue. That is free advertising that Wart does for local venues and for local musicians and musicians that are coming through town.
Honestly, that's how I learned about Cafe Coda, was because of the jazz calendar. And that number to call, and I would love to get one more pledge.
It would
evening.
Be really great.
It'd be really nice to get one more pledge, whether you call 608-256-2001 extension 1, or you go online and pledge at WORTFM.org.
Ain't too proud to beg.
Ain't too proud to beg.
I don't mind pity donations. I don't mind guilt donations. I'll take any kind of donation as long as it helps Wart do what it can for our community.
Definitely. And if you love dogs, you can donate tonight.
Oh, yes. If you don't call, then that shows that you just don't care about dogs.
Don't care about dogs. So let's hear some more about dogs and get back to the Access Hour.
Well, we care a lot about dogs, obviously, and we've cared a lot about dogs from all over this country and abroad. So most of us, Joanne, Sue, and I all started our rescue careers locally here in the U.S. and with local shelters, but we also all have a connection with International Dog Rescue. And a lot of the time people ask, well, why would you ever rescue dogs overseas when there are so many dogs here in the U.S.? Why would you bother to bring a dog from another country? And so we wanted to share a little bit about some of the history of international rescue and why it's become important to us. And I know, Sue, you have a story that really touched your heart. So why don't you share a little bit about that story?
Okay. So a couple years ago, I was lucky enough to go to Turkey, to Bursa, Turkey with Jennifer to help bring some dogs home. And it was my second time there. And if you remember earlier, I mentioned that our Josie, who's here with me tonight, she's sitting right behind me. She is rescued from Turkey. And it's a pretty special experience to be where she was rescued, to be where, you know, she lived her life. And while we were there on that trip, we met a sweet little setter that was in basically the ending. This is the hard part about rescue. She was in the ending stages of distemper, and her name, Jennifer and I named her Evie. And, sadly, Evie did not make it, but she held on for a couple days after we left. We spent a lot of time with her. I do still get emotional about her. And I remember both Jennifer and I would, we both, if she would have made it, we would have probably fought over who got to foster her because she just was so, so special. And when you hold a dog like that, you know, not saying that dogs here in the U.S. don't die from distemper, because it does happen, but it's a lot more prevalent in other countries where they don't vaccinate against it. And it's so easily, you know, it's
preventable.
Preventable. Thank you. And holding that baby girl in my arms, you know, it changed me. And it's just where my heart is. It's where my family's heart is. I also mentioned earlier that my human children are adopted internationally. So it's just kind of where my family's heart is. And there's so many setters, particularly in Turkey and in Greece, that have been dumped, and they just really don't have a chance without us. So they'll either die on the streets or in a, you know, in a horrible shelter situation. So that's kind of where I guess my life kind of that was a profound moment for me, where it's just where my calling is now.
Thanks for sharing that, Sue. I know that that's a really hard story to talk about, and Evie really touched both of our hearts. Mm-hmm. And so I started the International Rescue Program for Above and Beyond English Setter Rescue about 5 or 6 years ago. And people ask me, how did that begin? And it really started randomly with a call from a woman out in California named Mary Willis. She had connections in Greece in her case. And she reached out to me and just, she knew me from running transports. My name was all over Facebook from sourcing volunteers to run transports. And she said, have you ever rescued dogs from overseas? And I said, no, I never have, but why are you asking me this question? And she said, well, I've got a friend who found this hunting dog, and she's been trying for a year to find it a home with no success. And so she was wondering if she brought it to the U.S., could you find her a home? And I said, well, I've never done it before, know nothing about it, but I'm sure I can find her a home if she got to this country. And so she put me in touch with this woman named Amanda, who lives in the north of Greece. And we talked, and she had this setter. Her neighbor in the village, the next village over, had also found a dog. And so she asked me if I would find them a home. And so, crazy person that I am, I invited this total stranger into my home. So she booked a flight, Amanda did, with these two dogs. I picked her up at the airport, this woman I knew nothing about. And she came home and stayed with me for 5 days. And she talked to me a lot about the situation that she dealt with every day. And then she invited me to go see her shelter up in Kozani. And it was really just such an amazing, painful, but incredible experience to see so many dogs in need. And one of the things that happened when I was there that it blew my mind. She had a few puppies that were at her shelter, and there was a gap under the fence, and the puppies got out from under the fence and started to go out into the road. And one little puppy ran into the road, and a truck was coming. And that truck, you would think the truck would try to avoid the puppy, but no, this truck tried to hit the puppy on purpose. And I had to run out in the middle of the road, myself and Amanda, and actually scoop that puppy up, because they were literally trying to kill it. And that's not something I had seen before in this country. And some of the things that we've seen in the time that I've rescued over there just really make your heart break. And so all of us are passionate about rescuing dogs wherever there's a need. But part of what we've seen is that we have so many resources here in the U.S. We have humane societies and no-kill shelters and so many breed rescues. And there are so many people who volunteer and really care. And when you go outside this country to, most of the time I've done dog rescues, been in like the Mediterranean region, the culture is so different and the mindset is so different. So there's really no hope for a lot of these dogs in their home country. And so that's why it's become so important to all three of us to really make a difference for them and for the people who try to rescue them. So in order to do that, though, you have to make a difference in whatever way feels right for you, whether it's rescuing a dog here at home, whether it's donating, whether it's volunteering in so many ways. The important thing is, you know, to try and help wherever you can. And there are so many ways you can help. So Sue, Joanne, maybe you can just share some thoughts on if people want to get involved, how can they help? What kinds of things can you do to make a difference?
Go ahead, Sue.
Oh, okay. You know, volunteering at your local shelter, even if it's just, you know, stopping in and taking a dog for a walk or a run, just to get them out of the shelter, you know, because shelters can be stressful for dogs. It's loud. It's noisy. You know, shelter workers are doing their best, but they're short-staffed, and they typically have a shoestring budget. So, that's one way. I'll pass it over to you, Joanne, if you want to throw some other things in there.
You know, did you say taking them for a walk to get them out of the shelter?
Yeah.
Maybe taking them home for the weekend. Holding a dog at adoption events. A lot of the local rescues here will offer training in order to hold a dog at an event. There's other ways, not if you can't have a dog for some reason, whether you're in an apartment, you could offer your, if you have like social media skills, you could work with the rescue to promote them on social media. You could join a fundraising committee. There's several committees if you're not able to actually get involved with the dog itself.
Thanks, Joanne. There are so many ways to help. So if you want to learn more about how you can help or get involved or anything we've talked about tonight, please check out the WORT Access Tonight calendar for more information. We'll post some links, but thank you all so much for tuning in and hearing our stories about dog rescue. It's been great to have you tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you to our hosts for tonight's Access Hour, Sue, Joanne, and Jennifer. What a great show. And that's really just another example of what WORT has to offer with our programming. That number to call, I would love to just get one more pledge. Just get in last minute, 608-256-2001, extension 1, or go online and pledge at WORTFM.org.
And I just want to take a second to say thank you to all that's been made possible in the last couple of years. You know, you guys made the new boards possible, which we're going to be doing training and implementing really soon, because our boards, you might not be able to hear it, but they are dying. They have the slow, long death going on, and we will have the new ones in place due to you. And I want to thank you for the fact that I hope I will never again see a host sitting here in a pair of shorts and no shirt because our air conditioning had conked out and combos were 120 degrees and we had fans set up and we still nearly killed a couple of our volunteers. And I want to thank you for that. Air conditioning and heat is important. And I want to thank you for giving us the money that we could get a new water heater when our 39-year-old water heater died. And right now, our elevator is broken. And as someone who has a rather severe case of rheumatoid arthritis, I thank you for your donation. That's going to make it possible to fix the elevator. So so I just want to say thank you. And if you we really appreciate your continuing support. Please give us a call at 608-256-2001, extension 1, or go online at wardfm.org. Thank you.
And thank you again to the Access Hour hosts, Jennifer, Sue, and Joanne. And have a wonderful night, everybody.
You've been listening to the Access Hour. The Access Hour is WORT's commitment to community access to the airwaves. For this hour, we have turned the airwaves over to a member of the public. The views expressed on the Access Hour do not represent the views of the station, its staff, programmers, or the board of directors. Remember, though, that this show relies on your ideas. An application to produce a program can be found on the internet at wortfm.org. Look on the left side for Sign Up to Host an Access Hour. Music, talk, comedy, drama, or whatever can be conveyed over the radio, the Access Hour is anything you want it to be.
And you are listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.